Welcome to Journey to Oz, the podcast where we share migration stories from overseas to Australia. We are both registered migration agents, Nick, who specialises in family visas, and myself, Evan, who specialises in employer-sponsored visas. Over the years, we have helped many clients who have very interesting stories to tell. Nick, we've had the announcement recently of the border opening up again to international travellers. I'm guessing that's what's been keeping you busy lately.
Yeah, absolutely. Apart from recovering from COVID, but international border opened, well, at the time of this episode release, it will be yesterday, the 21st of February, 2022. And we will talk about this more at the end of today's interview and explain some of the ins and outs of the border reopening.
There's been a lot of, over the last few months, a lot of visa types that have been able to come to Australia, and there've been a lot of my visas, the work visas, but this is excellent for, yeah, having the boyfriends and girlfriends reunite, the brothers and sisters, the best friends, and just people coming to Australia and spending their dollars as tourists. So I look forward to having a chat about that at the end of the podcast, but mate, what have we got before that? Who would you interview this week?
I spoke to Ruchika about what motivated her to relocate from India to Australia. She's a big advocate for empowerment for women and is focused on sustainability solutions after starting a reusable nappy and clothing business, which led her to being a finalist in the Oz Mumpreneur Awards. She's a mother of two young children and has become a role model in her local community. I started by asking her about where she grew up.
So I was born in India, the capital city of Delhi, and all of my family lives in India. I completed my education there. I did my bachelor's in physiotherapy and I started job with the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare.
All right. So are most of your family still in Delhi now then?
Yeah, they are.
Okay. And how did you meet your husband?
So it was an arranged match.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was arranged by our parents and arranged marriage as it goes, the norm in India.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the stats on arranged marriages are probably better than the stats on non-arranged kind of Western style marriages is what I've heard. So maybe their parents know best, right?
It is. Yeah, it's surprising though. But I feel like in our socio-cultural background, like nowadays, things are changing with the new generation going for love marriages and all. But yes, for our generation, it was mostly arranged matches and it would be done like depending upon the social background, your family histories and all. So it was like arranged in a way that things would match rather than, you know, like not like a blind date or something.
Yeah, right. And I guess you're still given the freedom to pull out of the engagement or the marriage if you choose to as well. Yeah,
definitely. Like the families would touch base, then the kids would meet. And then, like I remember, we had a courtship period of 7 months, which was...
Oh, right.
Yeah, which was really good. And it's like one of the, you know, special phases of your life, the courtship period.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're like officially engaged and you can go out on dates, you can meet others, introduce to your friends and everything. So yeah, it's one of the best phases, I would say.
Yeah, okay, fantastic. Now, what motivated your husband and yourself to migrate to Australia then?
Yeah, so Nick, my husband's an ICT professional. And as I told you, like I'm from the health background and he is an ICT professional. So he was working with MNCs and he used to go to projects. So overseas as well. So like I had never been away from India, my birthplace, but he had been to UK and other countries for his IT projects. So he was really willing to migrate, though that time I was not the one who was very keen. However, like we had, like our daughter was born in 2012. And like that time I was a new mother and I, you know, like being very maternal instincts and all. And that time there was this gang rape case, which like it really shook all of us, the whole country, I would say. There were candle marches every day and so much going on the media about it and all this like things around females and things coming up. So that was the time when I became very emotional. And I said to him, like, I understand we have such a good life here. Like, we are one of the power couples, you know, IT and health. But I feel now is the time we should really think about moving to a better country, which is safer for females. Because I had a girl child, and like, I was really emotional that time as a new mother. And that's
yeah,
when
understandably.
We decided, yeah. And there were, like, it was, I think, that time people were going to Canada and Australia. They were the big, short countries. And we did our research. So we really liked the weather in Australia. And then the gender populations, like, that yeah. time it was, like, 51% of the population was female. And, like, the life is really very good for children and opportunities are there. So from that point, we decided, like, let's try and see. So we filed for our permanent residency under the skilled migrant category.
Okay.
So, yeah. So he was the main applicant, my husband. And we got through our PR around my daughter's first birthday.
Oh, fantastic. So you arrived in Australia as permanent residence then?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And what were your first impressions of Melbourne when you arrived?
So what happened, like in 2014, my husband came initially because he had already got a job offer.
Oh, okay.
However, destiny had something else in mind. So, you know, like it happens, like you get challenges and things thrown
yeah.
at you. So he arrived and he already had a job offer. But unfortunately, what happened, like when he came here, it went off the role he was employed
okay.
for. And I remember like he just had a $1,000 gift card like he had. And we just like kind of started our life from scratch here. The job was gone and all. But then he decided to stay over and try for more roles. So he kept applying for roles and finally he got a job, which was really good. And then I came back. I came with my daughter later on the 1st of January 2015.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So I still remember like it was like the New Year's Eve in India when we boarded our flight and when we arrived, you know, like a new year, a new day, a new beginning.
All right. It's 1st of January. Wow.
Yeah, really. So me and my daughter arrived here and I still remember like this officer, he was going through the pages of my passport and flipping through, he just asked me like, are you here for good? And I was like, yes, officer, because he obviously like he read that permanent residency thing. So
yeah.
he, you know, asked me around that, like, okay, you are coming as a permanent resident. And I was like, yes. So he was like, okay, welcome home. So I really felt like it was like such a good gesture on his
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Part. And I really feel like if I ever come across that officer or like if I could ever find him, I would like to say like a lot of convey my thanks to him because those two words, when he said welcome home, it really made me feel like home, you know, like it
yeah.
didn't make me feel like I'm miles away from my birth country. It was like, wow.
Yeah, it's such a big impact from just two small little words.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And like those words, I feel they'll stay with me forever now. Like they have been in the past few years we have been here. And it was surprising, like when I came here and I would say like Melbourne is so welcoming and it has got such a unique multicultural appeal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I was rather surprised. Like it wasn't that anything was strange or, you know, like
yeah.
it was like very welcoming, very warm. And we rented a place in Maribyrnong. So Maribyrnong itself, such a beautiful suburb along the river and the local community was very supportive.
Yeah, it's quite multicultural in that area as well.
Yes. I think like maybe we landed in a good suburb or.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like really very supportive.
So your family adjusted really well to the lifestyle in Melbourne then?
I had some issues around like allergies and everything. But as such, like my daughter, she was only two when we came here. So she was pretty good, like going to the community center. I used to take her for different classes so she would integrate, you know, into the local community and all. And okay. I myself joined the voice panel, community voice panel for Maribyrnong Council. So I could get acquainted with the local community and do stuff. Okay,
that's a good idea.
Yeah, because I wasn't working that time. Only my husband was working.
So you settled into Melbourne and you had a secure career. So what inspired you to start your business, Rue and Joey?
So what happened, like when I arrived in Melbourne, I resumed the responsibilities of a stay-at-home mom. I was not doing, you know, like because for physiotherapy, I would need license.
Yeah,
which
right.
I didn't okay. have at that time. Yeah. So I was stay-at-home mom and I was doing some community work and all being the part of the Maribyrnong voice panel. And that time I fell pregnant with my second one. And as it was like in India, I would do like some maternity shopping and all those things. So same I was doing here. And I came across that it was really hard for me to shop for cloth nappies. So like, because I am a fan of reusable nappies, I'm like into environment sustainability and all that. So yeah, I had trouble finding those. And that's when I realized that there is a good potential for this niche here in Melbourne, if I could do for maternity clothes and cloth nappies. So that's what prompted me to start my business, Rue and Joey, from home that time as a new mom. And it was really good because I could tap the new mom clubs I was going to, the parents groups I was going to, and locally in the western suburbs. Like, you know, through word of mouth, it got on. And my husband, he really helped me and supported me throughout that. And he was the one, in fact, who helped me coin the term Rue and Joey. Because like me, Australia was always about kangaroos and, you know, koalas. And he was the one, okay, let's, like everyone calls Rue, you know. And my daughter, in her finger, she used to do this kangaroo, skippy Rue. Dozing in the midday sun, that rhyme. And from there it came like, okay, let's do Rue and Joey, as in a mum and a bub.
What a fantastic idea. And I understand that you're known in the western suburbs as the nappy lady of the west.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because like it was all word of mouth and then the social media groups, local groups. And what happened, I pitched for the sustainable nappy scheme at the Hobsons Bay Council, Pitch Your Idea Night. And there the counselors, they were like really impressed and they were like, we never thought of, you know, about life cycle of a disposable diaper or life cycle of a cloth nappy and like what could be the carbon footprints and everything. And that's like one of them just mentioned the word lady, you know, nappy lady. And then it became that term. Yeah.
So how does that work with the reusable nappy rebate through the council?
Yeah, so now the Hobsons Bay Council. So initially when I pitched for this idea, it was usually the councils in Queensland which were doing this thing. But now many councils in Victoria have started similar things. So like if you are purchasing some hamper of cloth nappies or reusable nappies and you provide your proof of the invoice to the council, you'll get a rebate of $200.
Okay. And that's something that's still going now to this day?
Yeah. So it was started as a trial and now the trial will be completed and we will see like how it has gone, the trial. So like the council has told me that they have got a really good response with the trial. And depending upon the results, they'll see like if whether they have to make this trial as a business as usual.
Fantastic. And you were a finalist for the Oz Mumpreneur Sustainability Award as well. Was this something that someone else nominated you for?
Yeah. So these are the annual awards which occur like every year in Australia for women entrepreneurs. And I was nominated for this award. I received this email that you have been nominated and like you now have to fill in your details and other things.
Oh, right. Okay. So you received that out of the blue. You didn't actually know that someone was nominating you.
No. And it was a really good surprise. And and a learning curve for me, you know, when I went to Sydney for the conference and awards night and I came to meet so many women entrepreneurs, it was a big thing for me. Yeah.
Wow. It must have been very inspiring as well.
Yeah, indeed.
So you later joined the physiotherapy department of Bowen Health in Geelong. That was in 2018?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And how did you manage to juggle working for the Department of Health, being a mother and running a business at the same time?
Yeah, I would say like by then my business had become my passion. So it was like not just, you know, like selling stuff. It was more like creating awareness amongst the community around environment sustainability and the concept of reusable nappies and how it could be done in hybrid ways. So like, you know, what is convenient to you? So like if you are going outdoors, you could go disposable. And if you are home, you could do reusable. So going hybrid, which is convenient, you know. And so it was really interesting. And then it's like my, you know, like we all have our innate nature. So I'm the kind like who just can't stay at home.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I think when my kids were little, I was working full time at that time and I got paternity leave for 3 months.
Yes,
and it drove me crazy. So I can totally understand that.
So like it's me, you know, like if I see something, I feel like, you know, like I have to do it right. I'm that type. Like, you know, just be the change you want to see in the world. So like that phase of my life was like new mom and everything baby related. So it was natural for me to promote those things. And then I felt like I am being away from my patients, like clinically, because, you know, like I have so much clinical skills which are going waste. So I should put them. And I did not have, you know, truly speaking, like I didn't have experience of the healthcare industry in Australia that time.
Yeah.
So it was like the natural next step for me to gain that experience and see how the healthcare industry looks like here. So I joined Bowen Health and it was really good because like when I started, I remember like the first day of my joining and I just noticed a couple of things and knowing like, you know, the person I am and pointing out, I just mentioned about some fabric chairs in the gym. And I was like, you know, gyms are such high rush areas. And why don't we have vinyl chairs, which could be like easily wiped, you know, fabric chairs here. And that was like my first day. My first day at Bowen Health, and I mentioned that. And then everyone, like from the physiotherapy team to the multi-unit rehab team to the allied health director, everyone got this, you know, like little observation noted that some fresh pairs of eyes are there and they have noted this thing. And it's like now, like, you know, after like almost 3 years when COVID happened, that those chairs were replaced by vinyl.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So it was like mentioned then, but it was like that it could be a financial thing because if you're changing one area, then you'll have to do it for the whole rehab center, you know?
So you sort of taken your sustainability mindset from, you know, starting a business, working within Roo and Joey and implementing that in the workforce as well.
Yeah, you know, it happens. Like wherever you go, your thought system goes with you. Yeah.
Now, and to sort of work in physiotherapy in Australia, did you have to go through some kind of qualification conversion process?
Yeah. So like truly speaking, we have to go through a license.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I haven't taken that pathway because I really felt like with all the experience I have and then having to start from grade one again, you know, and prove myself because I was given feedback from some other people that it's a bit tricky to first go through the written exam and then three clinical. So instead of taking that pathway and applying for a full license, I just took my limited license where I cannot start my own clinic. I have to work under someone.
Right, under supervision.
Yeah, so like that limited license thing. However, I was very fortunate that when I joined Bhavan Health, I got the organization sponsorship for doing post-graduation in clinical redesign. So instead going for a full license and, you know, applying for things, I found it as a kind of next step to go into project management side of things and, you know, innovation and new projects and everything. So I took admission in this course for which Bhavan Health sponsored me. So I got scholarship as well as study leave, everything from Bhavan Health. And I could complete this course, clinical redesign. And now I'm doing project, service delivery, service improvement, quality improvement, and all that.
Right, right. And throughout this whole time working for Bhavan Health, did you have someone running the business for you, or were you doing both at the same time?
No. So initially I was running the business and later I wrapped it.
So Roo and Joey's no longer?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. But because it's a brand name, so I just sold off the stock, but I haven't sold off the brand name.
Yeah, right. Was it a hard decision to make to wrap up the business?
It was indeed. And that's why I have still kept the brand name, because I feel like at some point of my time, I might go that path again, you know?
So did you wrap up the business prior to COVID, or was it as a result of COVID?
No, it was prior to that when I started my studies. So that time it was a bit tricky with two little kids and the business, well as studies. So prior to the studies, like when I got admission, that time I closed the business.
And so you were traveling to Geelong daily to work, going through the Ring of Steel.
Oh, yeah.
I actually grew up in Geelong and my whole family lives in Geelong. So
wow.
I know what that Ring of Steel is like. I never actually went through the Ring of Steel, because I just sort of said, well, I'm just not going to be able to see my family for 6-9 months, however long it was. It was a long time. But what was it like having to go through that rigmarole every day just to get to and from work?
Yeah. So like initially I remember like there were very few people from metropolitan Melbourne who are employed there. So like we were the ones, you know, who were donning masks and everything, and rest everyone else was, you know, roaming around mask-free, even at work, because the mandate initially was only for metropolitan Melbourne. And even at the morning tea and lunch, we would isolate ourselves, like not to mix and sit with the crowds, just to be, you know, like sure of things and all. But then the mandate, gradually it was like that everyone has to wear a mask at healthcare settings and all.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was necessary to do those things, I feel now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Early in the morning when I would leave my home and then go through that so-called Ring of Steel, like, you know, sometimes you would be stopped and you had to keep around 15-20 minutes daily aside extra.
Yeah, right.
So just in case you are stopped for your driving license and your exemption and all that things, so your work permit and all.
How often were you late for work?
So I think I remember like the first week this has started, I was late by 50 minutes.
Yeah, because, okay.
Yeah, it was massive, yeah. But then like gradually towards the second and third week, it was okay, because like the systems were in place and they were not stopping each and everyone. Then they were like, they had, yeah. So it was like pretty much even they were pretty good with carrying out the procedures.
Okay. So they got better at it. So you recently started a new role with the Transport Accident Commission as a project lead for health and trauma. What led you to leave Bhavan Health and join the Transport Accident Commission?
My journey with Bhavan Health had been really interesting one, like for my career progression and my studies. However, during the COVID phase, the lockdown, especially my children, like my daughter, she was being homeschooled. And like my husband being the ICT professional he is, he was doing work from home. So it was like entirely he was looking after the kids and everything, their remote learning. Right. So, you know, so he was the one who was doing everything, like even like they're helping them set up there. So it was like three people on our homes were on their systems at one time. Like my son would be doing his kinder sessions online. My daughter was doing her school remote learning and my husband was attending his meetings online. So it was very tricky. And he was, I would really say like he was handling it really well, like, you know, seeing the monitoring the kids and doing his work as well. But it was really tricky for the kids to understand that despite every other parent doing work from home, their mom has to go daily, you know? Like they do understand that, okay, when you are in a clinical field and you have to see your patients, you have to be physically there. But then, like, you know, sometimes you get such questions from little ones, like, why can't you do telehealth? Like, why can't you just video call your patients from here and make them do exercise and all? So it was really tricky for them.
So they were familiar with telehealth then?
Yes, like because they FaceTime a lot. As I mentioned, like all of my family is in India. So they are used to doing video calls and everything. So they feel like if, you know, like even the kinder one and school ones are doing everything online, then why can't the patients do it online?
It's a fair question, actually.
Yeah.
Have your children traveled to India with you to meet your family yet?
Yes, they have. Okay. So my son has been there twice and our families have even come, like the time he was born and then during his first birthday and all. And in fact, in March 2020, I was to travel for my nephew's birthday when all of a sudden, you know, like the travel rules changed. And because now we are Australian citizens, so for us, our tourist visa was cancelled.
Yeah, okay. So how was the citizenship application process?
I feel it was pretty much straightforward.
Okay. So, Ruchika, can you please tell us a little bit about some of the work that you do within the community?
Yeah, so like besides my usual health background, I am pretty much involved in the community. And for this, like some of us like-minded people have started this organization, which is a nonprofit, Community Aid Australia. Okay. And yeah, we do some projects. So it's because like all of us are doing our full-time jobs and all. So once in a while, we take up projects and do things. So like, especially during COVID, we have done a lot of engagement with Department of Health, providing information to the CALT communities. So especially Indian Australian community around informations and vaccinations, the materials, the resources, everything. And translation of those resources, as well as we have done another online project which we did, and I feel that it was really required because of the, you know, like the social disconnect which happens especially during the lockdown phase. So during lockdown, people were not allowed to go anywhere, and we could not, like the Indian Australian community, we all had our plans cancelled, like going overseas, meeting our families there, and we were just grounded, you know, kind of grounded here. So that time we did festival of Lord Krishna's birth online with help from ISKCON Temple, Melbourne, St. Kilda.
Okay.
Yeah, so that we did online and there were around 400 attendees.
Oh,
which
wow.
was done in a digital format, which was really interesting. Like people got connected, they could connect culturally and discuss things. So it was not only a cultural meeting, it was also like they were, you know, connecting socially online and discussing things. Then we did another project, which was for the federal government's Be Connected program. So this is a program for seniors going digital. So like,
okay.
Yeah, digital literacy for the elderly. And I feel like COVID has taught us a lot this way. Like we cannot go, you know, like physically everywhere. So we have to get apt skills to get online and how to do it safely, which is like the key word for seniors and even for youngsters today, like how to safely do things online. So not just doing things and going on social media, but how to do it safely.
And how have the seniors adopted to that style of communication with each other?
It has been pretty interesting because earlier it was like people could go around for walks and all those things. And then with the lockdown, it happened that, you know, like many of them have comorbidities like diabetes, hypertension or other things going on. And they would restrain from, you know, going in groups and all that thing. So their isolation, especially during the lockdown, they were feeling very isolated. So this led to emotional drain as well. And but like being online has really helped them. So like with the help of, you know, FaceTimes or WhatsApp calls and videos, at least they are able and meeting their families overseas, as well as like attending their doctor's call online. So like either calls or video calls, telehealth, getting an e-prescription, getting it delivered to the nearest pharmacy. So I think that all has really helped them.
That's fantastic. Because of course, yeah, they're still the highest risk category of person in the community, even though, you know, for the most part, we're out of lockdown and most people are out and about. A lot of people don't even wear masks in Melbourne anymore. But the elderly are still at risk, even for Omicron as well.
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
So it's good that there's been some adoption there. So Richika, what are your plans for the future?
Thank you for asking that question, Nick. I feel like seeing my personality and the growth I've had in Australia, I would say like Australia is really the land of opportunities. And
the way
I have grown here, like when I was in India, I thought like that was it, you know, like being a physio and doing my job and then being a mom. That was my life. But here I've come and I've seen myself evolve. And that's what I would want everyone to do. Like there's no stopping if you would want to do things. So now I'm part of the United Nations National Women's Committee. And I'm doing things for them, as well as I've got into the Community Voices program for Victoria. So this year I would be doing that. So that will give me more of the edge on the community work I would like to continue doing. So getting into the Victorian Multicultural Commission, their work, as well as through the media channels. So doing more community work, I feel, and just be the change I want to see in the world.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for joining us today, Richika. You have a really inspiring story and good luck with the future of spreading the causes and helping people. It's a good thing that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you so much, Nick.
Mate, what a fabulous chat with Richika. And I actually, funnily enough, years ago, I remember coming across that reusable nappy initiative. And it's amazing to find out where that started. And I think what I really love about co-hosting this podcast with you is the excellent journeys that these migrants have, and they later become Australians, but what they do and what they bring for value for their local communities. And I love the community spirit that Richika has as well.
Yeah, absolutely. As a parent, I really enjoyed chatting to her about how she juggles being a mother, running a business, and also her work as well.
And as a fellow parent myself, her motivation to come to Australia from India. And I guess talking about people migrating to Australia, the good news, as we know, that the border is now down. As of the 21st of February, fully vaccinated visa holders can now travel to Australia, doesn't matter what type of visa, and without a travel exemption. I do need to stress, though, that unvaccinated visa holders will still need a travel exemption to enter Australia. The travel exemptions are issued by Border Force Australia, and the visas, as we know, are granted by the Department of Home Affairs. Nick, as we went through at the top of the podcast, you've been very busy with these sorts of inquiries.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to clarify, fully vaccinated means TGA approved vaccine. So I've written a blog about this recently that explains where to find this information. So from the relevant Department of Home Affairs website pages, as well as the relevant state government websites, because the states can still enforce their own restrictions. So if you are considering coming to Australia, you need to check the federal government website for the requirements, but also the relevant state government website as well.
It's great as an island nation that the border restrictions have now eased so that people with a visa, any type of visa, can come to Australia as long as they're fully vaccinated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I recommend checking out the Hansen Migration website and just reading our blog for any further updates and for more information.
Thank you for listening to the Journey Towards podcast. If you've liked what you've heard, please subscribe and also leave a review. We will release a new episode every second Tuesday, so stay tuned.
The Journey to Oz podcast is produced by Nick Hansen from Hansen Migration, Migration Agent Registration Number 1679147, and Evan Bishop from Worldly Migration, Migration Agent Registration Number 1679414. Any information discussed in this podcast is made available for entertainment purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for professional advice. We do not make any guarantee or accept any responsibility for the accuracy and completeness of any of the information discussed. You should obtain advice from a registered migration agent or an immigration lawyer before acting on any of the content discussed in this podcast. You can find a list of registered migration agents by visiting mara.gov.au. The information contained within this podcast may not be reproduced without our prior written consent. In the spirit of reconciliation, we acknowledge the traditional custodians of land throughout Australia and pay respects to their elders. We extend that respect to all Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islanders today. Thank you for listening.